Welcome to the ProMinis podcast, talking music videos with me, Robbie Litsky, and David Knight. And today, we're talking to one of the most exciting up-and-coming talents in British music videos, Milo Blake. Over the past couple of years, Milo has directed videos for a host of emerging music artists, such as Lewis Kultcher, Lord Apex, Kamal, Willow Kane, and Lava LaRue, impressing with his experimentation, resourcefulness, and versatility. Milo has already notched a few UK MVA nominations, and he recently won a Shark Award for his video for Lava LaRue's Magpie. He also recently directed the new video for Bongia, his latest since joining Spindle last year. We began by asking him how he got his start by connecting with an exciting new generation of musicians.
It was a case of, you know, finding their music on SoundCloud, and I was like, oh, who are these really cool artists? And then I found out that they were, you know, artists similar age to me in London, and you know, I felt like it was a good opportunity with which to maybe try and reach out to them. And I did some work for someone locally who followed them, and they followed this person. Clive Mercury was his name, and from there that kind of springboarded into a relationship with another artist, this guy called Virgil Hawkins, and then I landed with Lewis Kultcher. And then right. Lewis was kind of the one really making a fair amount of noise with this stuff. And it was kind of from the point of the collaboration with Lewis that it really started to open doors. But it was just a process of kind of leapfrogging from one artist to the other, word of mouth, trying to build that up. And then I was just in a fortunate enough position to be making videos for a lot of these artists when they were all kind of coming up at the same time, and they were kind of getting attention around them as I was making videos for them. So it was just a really good springboard, you know.
Yeah,
I guess that leads quite nicely on to like the first big video we saw of yours, which was the Lewis Kultcher video.
Yes,
for Be and Me. Do you remember kind of how the idea for that one came about?
Well, Lewis basically had this EP called Smile Sound System, and he had designed it specifically more like a DJ set in terms of like the journey of the mood of the songs. And the track Be and Me was kind of the one which he wanted to have as the one that kind of kicked down the door and introduced this kind of new brand of music that he was working on. And he also wanted it to be something that maybe like charted the kind of like the history of sound system music, and kind of also the transformation of England at the time, you know, with places going from locations that were kind of industrial towns, you know, turning into spaces where, you know, really interesting music and culture were coming out of, like your Wolves, Birmingham, Manchester, you know, all these type of places. And we kind of like felt like talking about the track, because it had a lot of these other musical reference points, whether it be jungle, club, house, it kind of felt a bit like a living organism. And so we wanted to try and find the right techniques with which to kind of mirror this effect in the song. And that's what led us to work with lots of different kind of formats, like stop motion, like a bit of motion graphics. So that was where the impetus to try so many things kind of like came from within that song.
Right.
Going back a bit, Milo, what's your background? I mean, how did you become a director?
Both my parents have been like involved in the arts. Like my mum was an actress, and my dad was a playwright, and that's actually how I met. And, you know, just as a result of that, I've kind of been surrounded by stuff to do with stories and kind of cinema culture, and out of that a desire to tell my own stories was kind of like nourished. And I'd also loved music. My dad was massive into his music and always playing songs when we were at home, and kind of getting into music videos just felt like a very natural decision, because to me it felt like it combined my passion for music with a passion for visual storytelling. And it was nice to be able to just fuse the two together and see what I could make, really. And that was kind of how I developed into a director, I guess, from starting with that film upbringing and then just having artists around me as well led me to kind of start in music videos.
Yeah, so when did you first pick up a camera?
would you say like first picked up a camera to make anything or just to make my first kind of major music video or proper music video?
Well, I'm always curious about what it is that, you know, makes people start to want to make stuff. But yeah, I guess there were things that you made obviously up before you were featured on Promo News because they were obviously of a standard. And I'm interested to know that you did quite a lot of, in those first videos that we featured, there's a lot of camera experimentation and using different techniques. Presumably you were doing all that stuff before that, or were you?
I really like being able to try new things out in my work. And I was given this platform by the artists and I kind of wanted to push the boat out, I suppose. And, you know, I didn't want to do something that was maybe, I don't know, like, I felt like I had an opportunity with which to take a bold swing at something. And I thought, let's try and experiment within these kind of like circumstances. It might not work, but I feel like we'd be maybe foolish not to try and do something adventurous because I wanted my work to not be a throwaway, I suppose. Like I wanted it to try and make an impact. And so, you know, these videos were actually really the thing that ignited me to try these techniques in the first place.
And yeah,
it was, I'm quite grateful to the faith that the artists put in me that they allowed me to try this stuff out when, you know, it could have gone a bit pear-shaped, but fortunately it worked out.
Yeah. What kind of budgets are you working with at this point?
Oh God. We were working.
You had budgets, right? You know,
at the time I was just really eager just to make stuff, you know, and I wanted to make good stuff as well as best as I could. So I was at uni and I used a little bit of my loan to kind of like help us get across the line and stuff. And the budget that we would often have from the artist would be quite small, you know, it'd be a couple hundred quid sometimes, it might be a grand, you know, and it was about just trying to do everything we could in terms of like favors pulled, you know, gathering all of our resources, maybe putting our own money in here and there to just get us there, you know, because
we
wanted to make something at the end. And it was kind of that big burning passion which got a lot of these projects over the line.
One of the videos in that, I suppose the first year that we featured your work, that I really like is the Lord Apex and V Don video. It's kind of a classic music video idea, the POV. But tell us about how that idea came about.
Well, one of the things that was put to me by the management of Apex was they really wanted it to be in black and white. And you know, that was fine with me because I'm a big fan of black and white cinematography. I've used it a lot. Lehane was probably a film which really kind of like opened my eyes in terms of directing, and still to this day, one of my favorite films. And when thinking about this track, we were kind of a little bit inspired by video game culture in a way, and kind of like, you know, stuff like GTA. And we just wanted to try and do a story that felt like you were kind of playing a character, hence why POV was such a useful technique to use. And at the time, this track was part of this EP called Supply and Demand. And we didn't want to do something which was an obvious story about a drug dealer or something like that. So we wanted to do a little bit more of a playful spin and have this dealer actually kind of giving out these rare white label records, which were for Apex's EP. And, you know, this idea of kind of the music itself being this product which everyone needs to get their hands on, and then putting that into the world that we were building felt like just a much more interesting thing to do. And it was really nice to actually explore that given the circumstances, because we didn't have a lot of money, but because of the technique always being kind of one angle, we were able to move quite quickly and do lots of different kind of like versatile things. And it was just actually a really nice shoot process. What's still to this day, one of my favorite shoots that I've done.
How long did it take to shoot?
Oh God, we did it over 2 days, and it was like long hours because we needed to make sure it felt like it was like a proper journey that you were going on, that this character we were with was really traversing the whole of London. So
yeah,
it was starting as early as we could and basically finishing at midnight on kind of both nights. And again,
yeah, it shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a mini movie. It's great. And also, I'm curious, like, you've got the camera, like, where the head... How did you do that?
There's a kit company called Feral who do a really good kind of, like, POV helmet, and that was kind of what we were using.
Of course.
It was kind of about staging moments around the angle, which really felt like, you know, the other characters who were in the film were kind of talking to the camera, whether that be Apex actually rapping the song as if it's kind of a conversation, or whether it's other people kind of meeting up with him, etc. We just really tried to make sure, you know, that it felt like that, you know, this character was alive in the world and kind of had a distinct presence within it.
I was going to ask quickly maybe about one of your last videos of 2020, the video for Kamal's about the party.
Yeah.
Which is obviously another interesting point of view.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you, height of lockdown as well?
I mean, it was a bit of a mad idea to do at that time.
Yeah. I mean, did lockdown inform the way you kind of shot it? Because obviously it has a very kind of surreal perspective looking kind of top down.
I don't know whether I could say that lockdown was something that inspired us during that moment. It was more about just, I don't know, feeling like that I hadn't seen a house party shot from this angle before, you know, this kind of God's eye view. And I thought it would be quite cool to try and just see if we could do that. And it was bloody difficult at points because, you know, finding the house with kind of the big enough ceilings with which to actually allow us to kind of rig the camera where we wanted it to be took a while, especially as, again, we didn't have much money. So, you know, places with higher ceilings tend to be a little bit more expensive.
Yeah.
And then just also working out how we could efficiently kind of like re-rig in different rooms to make sure you were still kind of like tapping into the different hotspots of the party, whether that be in another bedroom, in the kitchen, in the bathroom, wherever, what was tricky, you know? And like my DP, Reese Warren, spoke to me kind of about this particular lens, which gave like a really distinct perspective, and it kind of really stretched out a person, particularly if you kind of like position them right in the middle of the lens. And so that's what kind of gave this great perspective that we were able to use on the day, really.
Moving into 2021, one of the kind of standout videos was Lava LaRue's Magpie, which is an ambitious symbolic portrait of London set in a tube train. Yeah. How did that project happen?
Well, Lava had seen my work with Lewis and Apex and Finn, and she messaged me being like, oh, I've got this track, you know, I'd love to work with you on it. And as soon as I heard it, I was like instantly won over. And then she explained a little bit of the stuff that she was thinking that she wanted to pair with it. And it was very heavy on London subcultures. And it was kind of a way of exhibiting them she was kind of looking for. And I felt like using a tube carriage as kind of like a subcultural timeline, traveling through it, could just be an interesting way to do this. And, you know, Magpie is kind of a bit of a complicated love letter to London, I suppose, you know, highlighting a lot of the beautiful communities that have come out of its history. But, you know, each time there has been a certain subculture that has cropped up, there's always been something where I think they've either been working against it, or, you know, striving against something or for something, you know, whether that be racial injustice, whether that be inequality, you know. And it was important to make sure that both sides of London's character were kind of highlighted. You know, it wasn't just something that was like, oh, London's the greatest city in the world and there's nothing wrong with it. I do think it's the greatest city in the world, but it's not without its own issues and failures like anywhere else. I just think it was important to make sure that it was a two-sided character we were given London and not just, you know, like a monolith kind of version of it.
Yeah. When we featured it, you mentioned that it was inspired by a book of photography, or you use that as the basis of underground, the underground thing.
So there was a photographer who we had found in our references who had actually done a whole book on the characters of the underground, and it was just a case of when we were coming up with this idea, I really liked the lighting of the tube kind of in the 60s and kind of 70s. It was like a slightly different tone to it, which was like slightly more kind of magenta. And I spoke to my DP about how we can maybe make this happen, and could you use this as kind of our central foundation reference? And also just kind of like the quality of the characters that were in the pictures. You know, it was people from all walks of life. It was, you know, it was nice to see kind of people who looked a bit like a wheeler dealer kind of also sat alongside, you know, the mum with her two kids, or the young man on his first day of work, you know. And it was just nice to have that that whole sense of London story sitting within one picture. I just thought, and that was also one of the things as well that we were looking to try and make the video feel like, was just like one long moving photograph. And that was kind of another piece of direction that I was trying to give to the teams. That is what we should be looking to aim for the feeling of the video to be like.
Yeah, and it is ultimately, you're making quite a positive statement about youth and subcultures how they're sort of connected through the generations. And
Each one feeds into the other, you know, and each one is kind of riffing off the next as they kind of evolve. And that was basically what the magpie character was kind of meant to represent, because she walks through all of these kind of subcultural moments, and then we finish on her in kind of the modern day, and she is kind of like the culmination of all the things we've gathered off our parents and our parents' parents into, you know, a certain world perspective that I think you get when you've been in a place which is so like shrined in people exchanging ideas with each other, you know.
You're listening to the Premier News Podcast, talking music videos in association with Loop Talent. Make sure to subscribe on your favourite platform to hear more in the series.
Moving on, I guess, so that was 2021, and you've been, you know, you've obviously, you've done some more, I guess, more pop-oriented work, Willow Kane.
Yeah, I think Willow Kane is quite an interesting brand of pop. I mean, she still makes a lot of bold instrumental choices, I find, and that was kind of what drew me to her initially, was because I don't know, it was kind of like pop, but there was kind of like Stone Roses kind of like influences in there and stuff, which I thought was quite interesting in terms of how she was choosing to fuse that together. And she also kind of had a really interesting character as well, which kind of led to us creating Two Seater, and that was very much born out of the fact that I knew she was big into her jewelry, and there was also kind of this slightly like dream world perspective that she had in mind. And I was thinking, well, how can we kind of combine this jewelry kind of influence with that? And it was, we kind of settled on fusing together, you know, an Amelie meets Uncut Gems type world.
And, very well put.
What a crossover.
You know, so having the kind of characters of Uncut Gems, like the mob wife, like the hip hop kind of rap star, the dodgy like jewelry shop owner, but then putting all of these people into a world that was like, you know, fused with kind of orange Martian color. And, you know, we also used a bit of infrared lighting as well on this, and you know, that was really effective in kind of just creating quite a mad, you know, visual cocktail, I suppose.
But you've gone back to, as you say, you're a fan of black and white cinematography, and you've made two videos for PRXZ. Is that, I mean, it's probably not.
Pronounce it Prez.
Prez, thank you. So tell us about the Prez videos.
I mean, it came at a good time for me because I hadn't really felt like I had worked with stuff that was purely instrumental or purely electronic yet. And I kind of wanted to explore a darker atmosphere with that type of music. And Prez came to me with this idea of using these kind of like bikers. So there's a bike life culture in the UK where, you know, young kids are kind of almost using or making art basically with skills on bikes. And it's really, really impressive. And he kind of wanted to find a way to place this in a certain kind of dystopian narrative. And that led us to create this narrative for one of his tracks called Child in Red, which was the first one. And you know, a big inspiration for that was just the idea of mythology and also, you know, how there might be a bit of a clash in a dystopian future between what is digital and what is the natural world, and maybe a slightly amplified version of the current world that we live in, where, you know, everything is becoming more digitized and how that might affect us as a society. And we wanted to try and use the bikers as kind of like, basically, you know, almost like rebels to this idea. And in terms of like the look of it, that was very much inspired by black and white Japanese photographers, and also the work of William Klein, that very intense, contrasty color palette, but also, you know, a sense of energy to the pictures as well was like really important, because we were working with guys who were all about movement and, you know, being kind of like constantly on the go. And so our cinematography style had to reflect, you know, those instincts of the past. And we just found that that kind of like photography movement, particularly in Japan, was perfect for it. And that was definitely like a big, big influence.
So that was the first one. And the second one is, you've used choreography quite a bit in your videos, but this one is pure, kind of a pure dance piece, isn't it? Almost contemporary dance.
I love using choreography because I think, you know, dance and movement is just a really interesting tool to express emotion, I think, and particularly on camera as well, because everyone moves in a slightly different way. And there's a slightly different story behind why they move. And I felt like with this one that it was such an, you know, atmospheric track that kind of built up to a certain crescendo, that it would be nice to try something where it was, you know, we take everything away and just let the movement be the core kind of like storytelling tool. And speaking to Prez about it, I kind of came up with this idea of, you know, maybe like a dance of the Grim Reaper, and basically, you know, the dance being a kind of ritual before you kind of shepherd a lost soul from kind of like limbo into the next stage of the afterlife. And our version of limbo was basically a lone road. And that's what led us to find this location. I think it was out in Leighton, which, you know, kind of was basically a road between, you know, the land of the living and the land of the dead. And one of them was kind of caught in the middle, and the Grim Reaper, shepherds the lost soul kind of like into the next stage.
Great use of a electric pylon in that.
Yeah.
Which are underrated, I think, as architectural pieces.
I agree.
Totally. Like, and it was really nice in this location that, you know, fortunately, we could actually sit underneath the pylon. And so when we were framing the characters, once they were at that point, we had all these lovely lines which could sit over the top of them, you know, and almost feel a bit like a cage in a way, which was just also really interesting for the concept that we were going for. And it's quite a long song, like it's like 6 minutes 30. So trying to plan this as one shot, like, I have to give a big shout out to my first AD, Danny Rumbelow, because it required us having like nearly 18 different cue points, because I wanted certain things to happen at certain points in the track. But simultaneously, whilst we were doing this, we had to carry the speaker for the playback for the dancers, and it couldn't just be like a small speaker. It had to be one which they could really get into. So watching it as a director from like the outside perspective, this spectacle of trying to get this shot, I mean, it was a bit of a circus, because you've got the dancer's movement, the camera following her, and then you've got about 10 people behind trying to make sure they stay out of shot as we're all turning, kind of like this big
as the camera's turning.
It required a lot of luck and a lot of focus by everyone in the team on that day, and you know, they did a great job. So yeah, I really enjoyed it as a process, because it required me to rehearse a lot more, which I don't usually have the time for. And it was really nice to actually be able to properly spend basically half the day kind of plotting how we wanted to get this shot perfect. But obviously, when you've done that for half the day, you only get so many tries to do it. And it was just nice to try, you know, just a different process. I found it really interesting, but challenging.
Sure. How many takes did you have?
We managed 6 in total. So, you know, not too bad, but it was like, once we had done one, right, everyone back to start positions, and our dancer by the 4th one, bless her,
was exhausted.
You can imagine.
Absolutely exhausted.
Really tired, but and I had to plead with her, just a couple more and then we'll be there. And she was
you can have a break.
What's the usual sort of turnaround time you have, like from start to finish? Generally,
I try to push for like 2 weeks to allow you know, 2 weeks for pre-production time, and then I would say maybe another week and a half, 2 weeks to do the post. Sometimes you don't always get that, but then when the jobs are a little bit more post-production heavy, you really do need that extra half a week to do it. That would kind of be around the times which I'm looking at to make the videos. You know, when I'm in pre-production, like, and often with the ideas that I'm trying to do, they do need, you know, quite a methodical looking at how we manage to get each of the elements done to the standard that we want. And so I try and make it a priority to make sure that we get 2 weeks before and 2 weeks afterwards.
Moving to this year, the video for Abongjaya's Tinko Tinko. Obviously, a jump from the Prez videos, very, very black and white, to this, which is kind of like a hypnotic, kind of really surreal, colourful vision.
I mean, like, it was... The song is so kind of full of life that it didn't feel right to do black and white with this one. And also, like, I'd done black and white the last two. I wanted to jazz it up a bit. And so, again... Yeah. You know, it was a case of kind of just good timing with a great track. And I'd wanted to work with Abongjaya for ages. You know, funnily enough, we actually met when he used to work in Carhartt, and he wasn't as big as he is now. And I knew.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I said to him, oh, like, I really love your work. And he, like, said, oh, thank you, man. Like, and he also, like, said, oh, you're one of the few people who can pronounce my name correctly. So we exchanged Instagrams, and obviously he did his thing, was really building his kind of music platform. And then one of his tracks got sent into me, and we started talking about it. And he basically wanted to do something that almost felt like a sci-fi musical. Mm-hmm. And that's quite like a hard thing to try and work out how to do, and it's not come off like a bit laughable. So I kind of like spoke to him about, well, what kind of things would you like to explore within a kind of like sci-fi realm? And he was very much big on making some sort of comment about how digital trends are kind of, you know, basically consume our lives a little bit and, you know, kind of find their way into our subconscious. And also we wanted to try and like chart this kind of evolution of storytelling, how it gone from something that was a play to film and now streaming. And so that led us to, you know, come up with this idea for a character who worked at this all-consuming kind of technology company, which we called OB Dream Corp. And there it's a janitor who OB plays, and he kind of like tunes in to watch his favorite TV program, whether that be on on this kind of streaming platform. And we decided to make it a viral music video, and actually the viral music video, it was almost kind of like a music video within a music video in terms of how we were doing it. And that eventually becomes a portal for this separate reality, which he gets dragged into and basically like consumed by. I would say big influences for this from like a film perspective was definitely David Cronenberg's Videodrome, in terms of certain techniques that we chose to do with the computer, like giving it kind of an organic quality to it, and also trying to find ways to make it feel like that inside the computer there was a world living within it trying to break out. And also just how our fascination with things that sit on a screen was just, you know, things that we were looking at and trying to find a way to work it in the music video.
And it also takes him into a more pop direction. Is that fair to say?
I think it was a case of with this video, we wanted to try and show a different side to Obongjia. And, you know, he's got a very playful, cheeky side to his music. And I think that at least in the way that he's visually been shown so far, maybe that hadn't come across. You know, we had seen him in very kind of like, you know, so his video before that with Try is kind of like very majestic in terms of like how he's portrayed. And then you've got the one before that, Message in a Hammer, which was directed by Rollo Jackson, which is almost like a kind of, it's like Drive. It's very kind of noir-esque. Yeah, there's a bit noir in our version as well, but it was more just trying to give it a, yeah, like I said, like a playful kind of rendition of his character, something that wasn't too serious, but something that was still interesting.
Yeah. And again, it's another new thing for you, and you've shown, you know, versatility. You always seem to be doing something a bit different. What do you see the next 6 months to a year being like for you? What's coming next?
I mean, I don't really know, to be honest. Like, I'm hoping still good work, you know, and I think it'd be nice to do. I really like doing kind of narrative orientated stuff. Like, you know, all of my work, even though there is a little bit of performance in it and there's like camera experimentation, it's always anchored within some sort of kind of story or message that we're trying to get across. And it would be nice to explore a narrative which is a lot more kind of performance and actor led, as I've done it a little bit, but I would just like to kind of explore it to a greater extent, like shaping an actor's performance. As a music video director, you don't get too much kind of like contact time with that, just because of the nature of it being for a musical performer. And it would be nice just to try and explore that as a new kind of thing for me to do, and just increase my knowledge of how I can make that work in visual storytelling, because I feel like that's maybe one of the aspects that I could improve on.
I think we agreed that what you've done up to now has been outstanding stuff, and I'm sure you'll be making those next steps.
Yeah.
Well, how do you regard as success when you look back at your work? Do you think, you know, that was great, or that wasn't as great as it could be?
I'm always looking back, thinking that, you know, you're in every job, I wonder whether another way of doing it might have been a better route to take.
But that's very natural, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very natural. I think most directors will say that they have a little bit of a reevaluation period after a piece of work. But I think in terms of what I take away from success is, I don't know, you know, I think particularly in music videos, it, given the budgets, it's always a challenge. And I think if you feel like you've got kind of 75% of the way there, you know, then you've done well.
You're doing
exactly, you know, because you're always kind of working against the elements of the circumstances. And and like you said, you know, if I look at something and I feel that there's something a little bit different in it, or there's a new angle that I feel like is being shown within the work, then I'm happy with that. Especially as I'm still early in my career, you know, I'm still kind of building piece by piece kind of my language and what I'm good at, and each video gives me an opportunity to kind of craft and refine my style. And if I feel like that within a video it's allowed me to exercise a certain aspect and get better at it and improve at it, even though there might be another area which I thought was maybe lacking, I kind of just take that with me as like, well, we can look at working on that in the next video, you know. It's just one long continual process for me, and if I feel like I'm making, you know, steady improvements, then that's great, you know.
Milo, thanks very much for being on the podcast. It's been great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on. I've loved chatting to you.
This has been the Premier News podcast, talking music videos with David Knight and Rob Ulitsky of Premier News, in association with Loop Talent. Our thanks again to Milo and to an assistant Major Kwana and Tim Swaby for their help in the production of this episode. You can find links to the videos discussed in this podcast and more work by Milo Blake in the description of this podcast and at premiernews.tv, the home for the latest in music video creativity and production news. And subscribe to the Premier News podcast to hear more of our conversations with leading creatives in the music video industry. Bye for now.